Okay, Rabbi Yisai, we're in Daf Chav, but we're holding halfway down the Amud on the second wide line. You'll recall that we learned yesterday the top of the Amud, which was the fascinating story, the Maisa with Nakdiman ben Gurion. Says Yimara Tan Rabban, second wide line. Shloisha Niktama Lahem Chama Ba'avuran. Three individuals in history, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a special nest that the Chama, if you will, froze in place and did not set on that day, but continued shining beyond the normal Zman. Who are these three individuals? Moshe, the Yeshua, Menachem, and Ben-Gurion. Now, the Mishnah uses the term Nikdima. Now, you'll notice a few words before it says in the Gemara, Nikdira. Rashi said that Nikdira means at the very top of the Amid that the sun continued to shine. Zorcha, Loshen Makdir, Shoisa Chama Koideris Perakia, Vizirachas. The word Makdir or Kodar means to pierce, to bore a hole. And therefore, what it's telling us is that in the middle of this very cloudy horizon, you had the Chama that peeked through, boring a hole in the horizon in the sky. Normally, it should be totally dark because it's night. The Chama pierced through it and the rays continue to shine.
Like Hanukkah.
Oh, beautiful. Now the question is, what does it have to do with Nikdima? Because when we learned Nikdira in the Gemara yesterday, there was a Beis, and that Beis brought us to the Bach, and the Bach says, Ulai Tzorech Leimish Nikdima. And the reason why that would be perhaps a better choice is because the person that we were talking about was Nakdimayim. And if he was called Nakdimayim, like Gemara said, originally his name was Buni. The reason why they changed his name is Nikter Chama. So it makes sense then that his name should not be Nakdimayim. It should be Nakdirayim. If Nikdira is the basis of this new change of name, it shouldn't say Nakdimayim, it should be Nakdirayim. And that's why Nikdima sounds like it's a better choice in terms of the text. But what does Nikdima mean? So I typically understood Nikdima comes from the word Kodem, meaning earlier or premature. That normally the next time the Chama would shine would be the next morning, and a Kodesh Baruch Hu made a nest so that the sun should continue shining today, and therefore it's a election of Kodem.
Because it maybe means east?
So I looked in the art school, and the art school in fact says that the word Nikdima comes from the Lashon of
Kedem.
Mizrach Kedma. Mizrach, of course, means east, and Kedma is a further expression of east. So what does all of that mean? Because normally the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. And what the Gemara is telling us is that for these three individuals, the sun stayed frozen on the eastern side of the horizon and didn't quickly rush to the western side of the horizon, and therefore it's still up there in the Mizrach Kedma. It's still on the eastern side. But whichever way you learn Pshat, the point is that this was a very lengthy sunny day, where normally the day should have ended L'moshel after 10 hours, and the day continued for 12 or 15 hours, much beyond this month. So the reason for the nest in the times of Nakdim Ben Gurion, we already learned at length yesterday, because of the fact that he had promised to pay that Odoin, the 12,000 Kikar, or the 12 Kikar Kesef, if it didn't rain in time, and Hashem made it rain, and Baruch Hashem, everything was great. Now, what are the other two stories with Moshe and Yehoshua? Ezoktimar. Shloish Nikma Lem Chama, Ba'avuran, Moshe Yeshua, Nakdim Ben Gurion, Bishlam Nakdim Ben Gurion, Gemar. That's the Gemara that we learned, and that's what we have, B'Kabbalah. In other words, there's no written text. This is a relatively late story. It didn't appear in Tanakh. It's a Gemara. Yeshua Namikra. And as far as Yeshua is concerned, we have a pasuk there. The Chassidus says the pasuk, "Yidem Hashemesh v'yareach Omad," that Yeshua was mispalel. I am about to be totally victorious over the Amorites, over the Amorim, and I need more time, because if it's going to become dark, they're all going to flee, and we won't have that convincing total vanquish. So he asked the Kodesh Baruch Hu to cause the Shemesh to stop in place, and in fact, the Kodesh Baruch Hu accepted the tefillah. Everything stayed frozen in place and didn't continue to move for the next period of time until later that night. How do I know by Moshe? I'm going to learn a Gzeir Shav. This is a pasuk in the beginning of Devarim, where Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm going to give peace, pachtecha, or maracha on all of the people that live on this land. Uksiv hasam, and it says, by Yehoshua, ochel gadelcha. So therefore I'm learning now, ochel, ochel. What was the ochel gadelcha that we find? That's the pasuk that we just quoted, Vayidam Hashemesh v'ireach omad, that the Shemesh and Yireach didn't budge, they stayed in place. That was the Ochel, I will begin to show your godless. So it says Ochel there, it says Ochel by Moshe Rabbeinu. So I learn a Gzeir Shav. Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni Omar, I agree with him with Gzeir Shav, but a different Gzeir Shav. Asya taste. Ksiv Ochel says Ochel taste pachtecha. Taste is from a lashon of Nesina, to give. Uksiv Hosam, going back to Yeshua, v'yoyim teis Hashem eswam moiri, and that yoyim was that v'yidon Hashem esh v'yireach omad day, when the sun stopped in place, was frozen. So just like over there it says teis, and it's referring to that ness. So here too it says teis, it's referring to the same ness. Rabbi Yochanan Amasi Migufe Bikra. You don't really need to come on to Exer Shova from Yeshua to Moshe. By Moshe Rabbeinu's pasuk that we quoted a moment ago, Ochel teis pachtecha v'yirascha p'nei wa'amin, it says in the pasuk, Ashe yishma'un shim'acha v'rogzu v'cholum mipanecha. Now, the Gemara, both when it quotes the first part and the second part, leaves out the key words, which is tachas kol hashemoyim. It says in the pasuk, Ochel teis pachtecha v'yirascha al kol p'nei wa'amin, Ashe tachas Hashemoyim. So when it says all the Amim Hashetachas Hashemoyim, how could that be that throughout the world there should be that Pachad and Yira? After all, it's before the days and before the age of telephones and emails and faxes and instantaneous communication. So how would the people in South Africa know what's going on in the North Pole? And how would the people in the South Pole know what's going on in Australia or in America or whatever, that all the Amim Asher Pnei Kol Hashemoyim, everywhere, everybody should hear it. So the pshat is, Ezer Emosai Rogzu B'chol Mipanecha, B'shoshen Niktam Olei Chama the Moshe. When the Chama stopped in the sky, it didn't just stop locally where Moshe Rabbeinu was, it stopped throughout the whole world. So the whole world was wondering, hey, what's going on? Oh, it must be that Moshe Rabbeinu. Ooh, Moshe Rabbeinu can cause the constellations and the sun and the moon all to be frozen in place for hours. Wow. So therefore we have three rayas that this took place in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, either Ochel, Ochel, Teis, Teis, or this final pasuk, Ashishmon, Shemach, Avrogz, V'chol Mipanach.
What episode did this happen in the Chumash Amalek? What was
That's
it?
A very good question. Rashi in Chumash says it happened at the Melchemes Oig. However, there's another girsa, because we're talking about the Gemara that brings this story about Moshe Rabbeinu is in Avodah Zarah, and there it says Sichai. Rashi, however, in Chumash says Oig, and therefore the Meforshim on the Rashi say that the Chay Rashi is different than the Gemara, and that's why people want to go and change the gears of the Rashi so that it should say just like the Gemara that it's still not Sichai and not by Oig. But the Maase, it was the Sichai v'Oig situation, as opposed to Emoiri or as opposed to Amalek. Getting back to Marbachem Yishalei Yordu Aleak Shamim. So we said in our Mishnah, another reason why they would be Mesakin Eitanis would be if you have a city that there was no Shamim, that there was a drought. And the Gemara or the Mishnah quoted a Pasuk. This is a Pasuk back on Yud Ches Amid Beis, the last line, a Pasuk in Amois. What does it say in the pasuk? Tarti al ir achas, al ir achas loy amtir chelka achas timoter. So therefore, the Gemara, the Mishnah, quoting this pasuk, said one of the cities is terrible, no rain at all. Tarti al achas vali achas loy amtir, nothing's going to come down. Chelka achas timoter. However, one of the chalukas, one of the chalukas, one of the portions of land, one of the plots of land, timoter, will be full of rain. So therefore, part yes, part no. Says the Gemara, Amr Yudah Amr Rab, Ushtein Leklav. By putting the two together in one pasuk, it's telling us not only that city where it won't rain, but even the city where it will rain, both of them, unfortunately, it's going to be a klav. Now, why they're both going to be a klav? The reason is because in one place there won't be rain at all, In the other place, it's going to be a torrential rain, where there's going to be so much water, it's going to go and spoil the crops, unfortunately. Now, how do I know that that's the case in the Pasuk? Because the Pasuk doesn't just simply say, V'imtarti al ir achas, Hashem Yisborach says, I'm going to cause it to rain on one city, but it says, Chalka achas timata. Chalka achas timata has that sound, that that city, which will have the benefit of the rain, is going to become one shtick rain. The whole place is going to be one piece of rain. So what you used to see until now, land and surface and earth, it's going to be under 3 feet of water, and therefore it'll be chalka achas timata. It's going to be one piece of rain, and therefore shtei and leklala, both of them unfortunately is bad. And therefore in both places you'd have to have your masriyan and mesanin and masriyan, as opposed to any other cities, arum and arum, that are not so affected. Then they would be either mesana v'loy misras or misras v'loy mesana, like we had yesterday in the Mishnah. Now, since of Yehuda Amar Rav explained this pasuk, unfortunately, with a negative connotation, that's a klala, the Gemara tries to, if you will, bring from Yehuda Amar Rav four other psukim where on the surface it looks like it's leklala. Rav Yehuda Amar Rav is going to be mahapachit lebracha. So we shouldn't think Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, they're looking to chas v'shalom negativity, where we can go and find anything to go and explain it in a negative way. No. They're going to be four negative psukim, if you will, and each one is going to explain in a positive way. So the first one is Hos Yushalayim L'nida Beinayim. That unfortunately it says in Eicha that Yushalayim is going to be like a nida. Now, saying that it's going to be like a nida means that there's going to be a period of separation between the husband and wife, like every time you have a nida. And so therefore it means that we and Eretz Yisrael and Yushalayim, there's going to be a separation between us. On the surface it sounds terrible. And not for naught is it brought in the beginning of Eicha. However, within a marav the bracha, it really has a positive connotation, because kanida manida yishla heter avishlaim yishla takana. This is not something which is permanent, as everybody knows. This is every monthly cycle. So yes, there will be a period of separation between husband and wife for a week, 2 weeks, etc. But after that, they'll be reunited. So the same thing is, Miyat Hashem Yerushalayim will be reunited with the Jewish people, and hopefully that's what's going on as we speak. Halavayt Zan, the Haschodos Yeshur. And then we have another pasuk in Eicha, and this is the very first pasuk in Eicha, that Eicha, exactly, Shlaim Hoysa Vardad, and then here, Abasiyam Hoysa Ki Almana. Now, Hoysa Ki Almana means that unfortunately the husband has passed away, and then it's all alone on her own Yerushalayim, so that sounds very, very negative. Again, it says in the pasuk, not Hoysa Almana, it says Hoysa Ki Almana, like an Almana. What means like an Almana? Either an Almana or not. What's going on? The explanation of Kalmana means that this is only, again, a temporary phase, because she's not really Almana, it's just that she's on her own because the husband went away on some sort of business trip or whatever, and she's hoping to come back any day, but the Vali's not here, so in the meantime she's crying at night, when my husband's going to come home, but it's going to happen. So here too, Miyat Hashem, it's going to happen. Luli HaGemara, one could add another taich, and one could say that unfortunately the relationship between Yerushalayim and the Jewish people, Ilchoyr, is not like that of an Almana. It's like a Gerusha, because after all, we were married, if you will, and unfortunately, now there's been a get, because the Kodesh Baruch Hu has sent us away. He has rejected us. And therefore, Ilchoyr, it should have sent the Pasuk, Hoysa Kegrusha. By saying Hoysa Kalmana, that's already, Baruch Hashem, a much better statement. For instance, as we know, a person cannot take back a koyin cannot marry any grusha, and a man is not going to take a grusha if she already married somebody else. He's not going to take back, and he can always take back. So that would be another perhaps interpretation of the Hoysa Kalmana, that it's a positive thing, it's not a gerushin, it's only a temporary phase of an almana. Anyway, that was number two. Number three, V'gamanina sati eschem nivzim ushfal. Pasuk in Malachi, Kadosh Baruch Hu is saying about Klal Yisrael, he's making them nebuch nivzim ushfalim, that they are rejected. Lashon bizoyim, shamed and humiliated. Amr Yehuda lebracha, this is good. Why is this good? T'le mukmi minon loy reishin ahari v'loy gizirifti. Reishin ahari and gizirifti are low-lying positions government positions, which unfortunately are the least desirable because they are the most reviled positions. Reish in Har means a person who's the head of collecting customs and tolls on the rivers, and Gizarifti are policemen. So these are the equivalent of tax collectors and enforcers, and people look at them and they are willing to regurgitate by just looking at them. They are so reviled and so detested. Says the Navi, and says of Yudam Rav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will build in that we are Nivzim Shvalim, that none of the kings or none of the governors of any region will want to appoint us to these positions, because they hate us, they reject us, they mavaza us, they humiliate us and shame us. So under normal circumstances, it's a terrible thing that we should be scorned and shamed and humiliated. But if it means that we'll never be appointed as tax collectors or enforcers, that's givaldik, that's a tremendous bracha, because it's even more reviled than just being a Jew. And the final one, number four, is Ika Shemes Yisrael Kashiyonet HaKone Pamoy. This is a pasuk of Achia Hashiloini, who was a Navi, and he says about Klal Yisrael, particularly he's talking to Yeravim ben Nebat, but he says, Yikah Hashem Yisrael, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to smite, he's going to hit Klal Yisrael, Kashi Yodin HaKona B'mayim, just like a reed sways in the water. Now we know that reeds are extremely flimsy, and when they're swaying back and forth, you just have to go and give a blow, and they really begin to sway. So it seems like we are describing Klal Yisrael in a very, very lowly, negative position. Here you have, and then there are cups over here somewhere. Here's some cups. To learn, you have to use your cup. Anyway, so getting back to Agimara. Amr Yudin Amr Av Lebracha, Amr Shmuel Ben Achmeni, Amr Yonis, and Mike Sivsev, the Pasik. Ne'emonim pitzei oihev, ne'etoros, ne'etoros, ne'shikos soine. Ne'emonim means are faithful, from Lush and Amunah. Pitzei oihev means the pets are the wounds of the oihev, of the one that loves you. Those are more trustworthy and more faithful to you than the neshikos soine. Neshikos soine means the kisses of the enemy, of the person who hates you. So you have over here a person who loves you and he gives you a patch, and then you have someone who hates you and he gives you an embrace and a kiss. The pasuk tells you, rather I would take the pitzei oihev than the neshikos soine. The neshikos soine are netores. So actually, it has two pshatim in netores. Second pshat of netores means that they're a heavy burden. I prefer having the patch from my friend than having the heavy burden of a kiss from my enemy. So it says now, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, it's lebracha, because toive kolove shekil achia hashiloni as Yisrael. Even though an achia hashiloni compared us to a swaying reed in the swamps or in the marshes, but nevertheless, that's better than the bracha shebirchan Bilam Arasha, that Bilam benched us, as we'll see in the Gemara in a moment, a pasuk in the Chumash, which compares Klal Yisrael to an erez, to these tall cedar trees. Zokim achia hashiloni kilon bekana. He went and condemned them and criticized them, compared them to a kana, to a reed. Amalam Yisrael, Dikashem is Yisrael, Kashioner Hakana. What does that mean? Ma'akana zel imim mokem mayim v'gizoy machle v'sharoshem v'rubin. The kana has many, many ma'alois, many, many advantages and benefits that other things don't have. Number one, it's standing with mokem mayim, so therefore it's constantly nourished and nurtured as a result of the water supply. Because a kana, by definition, the reeds grow in the marshes, in the swamp area. The gizui machl means that if you were to go and cut the kana down to size, wait a little bit, and it will rejuvenate and regenerate. Vishirashim merubin, and it has many, many different shirashim, many different roots, so therefore, when you uproot it, part of it might still remain in the ground, because there are a lot of roots. Even if all the torrential winds come from all sides, well, not from all sides, but most sides, and go and blow on that reed, it'll just sway with the wind. It'll be totally horizontal at certain points. Mm-hmm. And perhaps even for an extended period of time, it won't be vertical because of the winds. But they will still remain anchored in the ground. But rather, the reed goes and sways with the wind. When the wind dies down, so then the reed will become vertical again. When the winds get very heavy, and again it will become horizontal, so it sways. Damu Ruchais, as soon as the Ruchais, they quiet down, miraculously the Kana is standing in his place as if nothing happened. So, even though he compared us, Achiyashalim, he compared Klai Yisrael with the Kana, it still has a positive connotation. Now, Bilam Arashah Birchon Be'eres, he compared Klai Yisrael to these tall cedar trees. Shenema, Karozim, the Pasuk continues on, Alimoy. Now, the Gemara therefore tells us, normally I would think to be compared to an Erez, that's very impressive. That's a bracha. No, it's not a bracha. Why not? My Erez ain't no imen b'mokim mayim. Typically where the Arozim grow, you don't find over there pools of water. It's not a swamp, marshy land. Ben gizim machlef. If you cut down a cedar tree, you cut it down. It's not going to rejuvenate or regenerate. You have to go and plant a new one. Ben shirashim arubin. And therefore it's easy to uproot in a sense because it doesn't have so many roots that are really deep into the ground. So I feel like Ruchai Shiba'olam Noishvis Boy, Emeziz Oisim Mekoyimai, even though when most Ruchais are trying to blow it down, since it's a solid cedar tree, it won't budge, but Kimin Shinoish Baruch Teroimis, oh, the southern wind, that's a vicious, violent wind, Oikrosai Baifrosai Albanov, that will go and uproot the entire cedar tree, and you'll find it lying on the ground, no longer vertical, it will now be horizontally lying there. Vloyoid! Not only all those other things that we said that the Kana has ma'alois benefits and advantages over the cedar tree. Elishazachon Kana lita limenu kovos! We go and take the reed, and what do we use it for? We use it for a pen. Lichter by a quill, shkoyach. Lichter by a sefer Torah, nevi miksuv. You go and use that on cloth and use it as a quill to go and write Tanakh. So you see that Kana, not only is it better than Erez, but it's a sanctified piece of Hashem's work to be able to use for writing Sifrei Torah and for Tanakh, etc. So once again, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav has taken that fourth Pasuk, which on the surface sounds very negative, we're only like a reed, this weakly, sickly reed. Oh, these reeds are very important. It gets to the point that they use them for Sifrei Torah. And since we started speaking about the reeds, so the Gemara continues, Tanur Rabbanan lo'ilam yehei odam rach kekonav al yehei kosher keres. A person should conduct himself with so much modesty and humility like a weak reed. A person shouldn't be pompous and arrogant like these tall, mighty cedar trees. Maizu Shabbat Reb Lozim Reb Shimon. Typically, Reb Lozim Reb Shimon means the son of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, who comes from Migdal Gedor, Mibes Rabbi. He had just finished listening to a shiur from his Rebbe. He was very, very happy. Apparently, his Rebbe gave a shiur today, which was a knocking shiur. It was really geschmack. And he was riding on a chamor on the back of a donkey. Metail, Rashi says metail means lismoyach. As you know, even today they have tiulim in Eretz Yisrael, which means they're going for some sort of tour, usually for something like a chalamoy tour where people are having a good time. A hike, good. But it doesn't have to be a hike. A tiul could also be you're going all the way to Tzafon, to Chlais, to Miron, to Asen Tveria, or you're going to Darom somewhere, you visit a museum, you visit a kibbutz, you visit this, that, the other thing, whatever. You're going for tiul for a day of enjoyment with the mishpucha. So here too, Reb Shimon apparently had a nice broad smile on his face, and he was enjoying a tiul, and Al Tzvasanor, the Sameach Simchindoy. As a result of that, he became, if you will, a little bit haughty temporarily at that moment. Because Baruch Hashem, he just finished his man or finished that week, and he had learned 12 masechtos by heart. And as he is traveling, he met coming towards him a person, who unfortunately was very, very ugly. Amaloi. And the ugly person greeted Reb Shimon Reb Lazar, Reb Lazar Reb Shimon. They said to him, "Oh, Maloi, Shalom Aleichem, Rabbi. Oh, Shalom Aleichem." And Reb Lazar Reb Shimon did not even bother responding directly to his Shalom Aleichem. However, subsequently, "Oh, Maloi," he said to this Odom Mechur B'Yosef. Now, the next few words in the Gemara are very hard to understand on a superficial level, because it comes out that Reb Lozer Reb Shimon, if you will, was humiliating and shaming this individual. And he says to him, "Omalei Rika, you empty one. Kama Mechur Oiseo Ish. Now he's not even addressing him directly, but he's talking about him in the third person, how ugly this person is. And therefore, Shema Kabnei Ircha B'choram Kamoyscha, tell me, are all the people in your town as ugly as you? Obviously, this is quite offensive. Many of the Mefarshim explain, Chas V'Shalom, to think about a brother of Shimon, that he's going to offend someone he never met before and say, "Hey, well, you ugly thing. Everybody in your mishpacha and all your friends are probably just as ugly as you are." How would that doesn't sound reasonable.
Yeah.
And the answer is that they give is that often a person's face or complexion really gives you an indication of what's inside that individual. There's a famous Ramban where the Ramban says that the reason why we call a face in Hebrew ponim is because it shows the panimius of that individual. If that person has a smile on his face, that means he's besimcha. That's, you can tell that this person is happy. If he has a frown on his face, then you can see that the person is not happy for whatever reason. So the ponim, therefore, is a reflection of the panimius. And what the Gemara is talking about over here, Mechor, we don't just mean that his natural facial expressions were of an ugly individual, but rather he had an ugly expression because apparently he was a Balaveira. And therefore that individual was himself a haughty, arrogant, criminal type, if you will. And he's saying, you are greeting me. Your greeting is not so much one of exchanging pleasantries and greetings. I, sensing, says Reb Lozer Reb Shimon, that this one is based on perhaps criminal activity where the you sometimes find these gangsters or whatever, they're coming, "Hey, hello Rabbi, how you doing?" You know, such a very pompous and arrogant and haughty way.
Who's asking for money?
We have to order the Kesar.
And the usual speech
for
just
the... Yeah, so why is the Torah given to such a...
Yeah. But that was the daughter of the Kesar.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. She was saying, but you see, I'm sure also
was not attractive. He was a blacksmith. His face was black from.
Admittedly, but that you cannot criticize the daughter of the Kesar because it's Kesaychel. But you're talking about a brother of Shimon who was one of the greatest. You know, the Gemara says Masech the Sukkah that Reb Shimon Yechoy, after he came out of the cave together with his son, he said, "Reisi b'nei Aliyah." If there's 10,000 or if there's 1,000, then it's only the two of us. If there are 100, you have two of us are included. And if there are only two, it's only me and my son, Reb Lozer Reb Shimon. So to say about Reb Lozer Reb Shimon that he was, you know, a person that acted in a haughty manner and humiliated this individual is hard to comprehend.
Didn't he become a tax collector? The Rambam Bar Mitzvah as a whole...
Somebody did, whether it was Reb Lozer Reb Shimon, I don't remember. You have to look it up. But getting back to our Gemara, I know you're going to look up shortly, probably pay hey, pay vav on the bottom. Yeah, very good. But getting back to our Gemara for a moment, what the Gemara is telling us is that he was a little bit rash with this individual. Now, it's interesting, both Rashi and Tosis both say the same shot, yeah, that individual was Eliyahu HaNavi. And the reason why Eliyahu HaNavi was dispatched by HaKadosh Baruch Hu for this purpose was to go and teach Reb Lozer Reb Shimon a lesson. Yes, it's great that you learn so much Torah, and therefore you really feel the Simcha Gedoyla, you're going on this enjoyable Tiyul and everything else, but nevertheless, you still got to limit and constrain yourself. In other words, to teach him a little bit Hilchos Derech Eretz. You shouldn't be going, you went a little bit too far, if you will. So therefore, to kind of control him, that's why, if you look at the top Rashi, Yeshvon Shekosta Behen Eliyahu Zochra Toiv, that this shouldn't repeat itself in the future. And the top Tosis says almost the same thing. He said, so almost word for word. Interesting thing is, if you look at Masechtas Derech Eretz, you know, that's one of the Masechtas Ketanas, it's usually published in back of the Avodah Zarah Gemaras, you don't find this story, you don't find Belio. How do I know? I didn't look it up. But if you look on the right hand margin next to the Toisis, it says, if you look up the Mishnah in the Masechtas Derech Eretz, this story does not appear. So maybe that's the reason why Rashi doesn't quote it from Derech Eretz, because he had our version of the Masechtas Derech Eretz and it doesn't appear. But there are Svarim. Anyway, so getting back to our Gemara, so Reb Lozer Reb Shimon unfortunately shamed Eliyahu HaNavi, this individual. Maybe all the people in your town are just as ugly as you. He told them, I never took a census, I really couldn't tell you. But rather, said Eliyahu HaNavi, in the costume, the disguise of this Ishmachor, why don't you go and tell to that professional who created me, in other words, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kama mechur kli zeh shasisa, look how ugly this kli is that you produced, in other words, Hashem, next time do a better job. So now, he was telling him, if you will, in a somewhat of a rhetorical fashion, but Reb Elazar, Reb Shimon got the message. He says, "Kimin shiada ba'atzmei shechata." He realized that he spoke out of turn. Yarda min ha'chamar, he came down from this chamar, v'nishtatech lefanav, and he prostrated himself in front of him. V'omaloi, he said, "Nanesi lecha, I agree. I shamed you, and I ask you, please, mecholi, please come be moichel me because I spoke out of turn." Omaloi, eni moichel lecha, jatelech le'uman shosani, v'omaloi kam mechur klizeh shosisa. See, he repeated the same statement again. He said, go and tell the Kodesh Baruch Hu, why did you make me into such an ugly individual? Don't just ask for mechila. Go and then pray for me. Go and say something to Hashem. Anyway, Reb Elazar, Reb Shimon saw he wasn't getting anywhere. So he just continued traveling. And he followed this Ish Mechor. And originally they were going in different directions because he just came across him. So apparently he did this because he wanted to continue asking him for mechila, the Gemara doesn't say. But anyway, he was traveling behind him. Until they came to the actual city where Reb Elazar, Reb Shimon lived, and this other individual, Ish Mechor, was traveling in front of him, you know, one wagon in front or one chamar in front. The people from Reb Elazar, Reb Shimon's town came out to greet him. Reb Elazar, Reb Shimon is here. Amalehem, so the Ish Mechor said, who are you talking to? Amalei, they said, that fellow who's in back of you, we're calling Rabbi Rabbi. Amalehem, imzer Rabbi, al yir b'kamoisei b'Yisrael. If this is considered to be your leader, we should never have leaders like this in the future. Amalei, b'neima, how can you say something like that? Well, Amalehem, kach v'kach osali, he don't even know what he humiliated me. Amalei, so they said to the Ish Mechor, afal became nevertheless, mecholei, please go and forgive him, she'odim gadol b'toyrohu, he's a very great person. Because of you, not because of it, but because of you, that you're asking me in such a polite way, I am Moichel. But he shouldn't go and do that again. He did it once, but he should not have regilus to do this again. And that's why Rashi and Tosis both use that same expression at the top. Okay, it happened, but that's it should be the first and last time. Based on this, Reb Elazar, Reb Shimon, after he got the mechila, he said the following drasha. It's like the Gemara was saying before, it's better to be, if you will, in a weak, soft position, like a soft reed, and don't go and have a zakoy mezakufa, go and have an erect bearing, just like that of an eretz. I'm not talking about physically, it's good to have a good, strong back. But the point is, a person should conduct himself with modesty and humility, like a reed. Because of that, Zohar Kana Lita Limena Kulmas Lechtabai, Seva Torah Tvil Mezuzah, because it was created in such a soft, weakly position of that of a reed, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, that's the perfect choice to go and write the Sefer Torah and Tanakh, just like we had Tvil Mezuzah, just like you find by Kadosh Baruch Hu chose Har Sinai because it was the lowliest for giving the Torah. Kadosh Baruch Hu chose the reeds as being the perfect quill to write a Torah. Getting back to our Mishnah, if there happens to be Chas V'Shalom buildings which are collapsing in that particular city, that city has to be Misana U'Misra'as. However, cities around it are either Misras or Misana, or Misana or Misras. We had a Machlekes Tanakam and Rabbi Akiva, as you recall. Anyway, says the Gemara Tana Rabban, when we say Mapoilis, a building collapse, it's got to be She'omru, B'riois, V'loi Ru'ois, She'enu Ru'uyes Lipoil, V'loi Ru'uyes Lipoil. If you have a particular building where this contractor did a bad job. He was a crook, perhaps, or even if he wasn't a crook, but he was totally, grossly negligent in the construction of this building. This building, from the first moment when it was built, everybody knew, anybody that knew the what was going on, knew that it's just a matter of time until it's going to fall. And therefore, this would not seem to be a reason for everybody to have to go and fast. Everybody's terribly upset about the loss of human life, chas v'shalom, or nebuch, all of the possessions. Yeah, it's a tragedy, but it's not a cause for fasting because
it's avoidable.
Exactly. What are we talking about in the Mishnah? We're talking about Briois. This was a solid building and was strong.
Florida.
I'm sorry?
Like Florida.
Florida was terrible. They said right away it was terrible in Surfside.
It wasn't Nicker as building was going to come down.
To you and me it wasn't, but I guess the building inspectors had been warning for a while.
It was urgent.
And even the last board meeting, they said you have to raise $12 million to go
and modify it.
Modify and solidify and all the rest. Stabilize it. Okay, regardless of whether this is comparable or not, we'll let you think about that for homework. But the point is, Mapoyu Sha'om has got to be a case of Briois. Buildings where everybody knows that they're solid, like the Rock of Gibraltar. There's a solid building. Valeruois, and not shaky and unstable buildings. As well as Sha'inaruias Lipal, that these are not suitable for falling. Valeruias Lipal, and not those that are suitable for falling. Now, it would seem that the term Sheina Ruiz Lipal, Vleiruiz Lipal, are just really synonymous with Briois Vleiruiz. What means a building that is Bari? It's Ein Ruiz Lipal. There's no normal reason and no logical reason why it should fall. Vleiruiz means a sickly building, a building which is anyway dilapidated and it's half destroyed, and that's a Ruiz Lipal. So, Freitimah, Hai Neos Ruiz, Hai Neos Ein Ruiz Lipal. Gzumte. Hai Neo Ruiz, Hai Neo Ruiz Lipal. Aren't they just the same terms? Why are you repeating it? No. There is a difference between the reisha and the sefer of this price. What's the difference? The naflu machmas kofayu inami the kaiman aguda dinahara. That you could have a situation where it is briois. These are strong. This naflu machmas kofayu gzimtai. It was as tall as Ichvais, the World Trade Center of Oliver Shalom, or as the Empire State Building. These are tremendous buildings. The reason why they fell is not because they're Ruois. They were Briois. However, they were Ruuyois Lipal. Why were Ruuyois Lipal? Because they were too tall. You have to have a better foundation. As we know, one of the major differences between, like Brother Shai just said, what's the difference? What's the reason why in the second base ministry they didn't have a wall separating between the Kodesh and Kodesh Kodoshim, but rather they had curtains? The reason is because the wall would have been too tall and there wasn't enough of a face. If you want to have a tall wall, no problem. Then you have to have a thick wall down below to hold it up on its strong foundation. But in the base ministry, they only had that Amma space between the Kodesh Kodashim, and therefore they couldn't go and expand it to 5 Ammas wide or 10 Ammas wide. It had to remain that one. For a 1 Amma width, you can only have twice a wall that is 10 Ammas tall, or 20 Ammas, but not 100 Ammas tall, etc., etc. So same thing over here. It was Takabriya. It was solid. However, it was Ruyas Lipal because it was just too tall. Or Inam de Kaiman Aguda de Nahara. And this is similar if to Surfside, if you will, because here you're talking about it was a solid building at one time, but because of the fact that it was built right next to the water, and the water just continuously on a daily basis
eroded
until the point that, unfortunately, it fell. So therefore, you could have a situation where it's briois, like a strong, however, at the same time, it's ruuyos lipal. So that's what the Brice is telling us is, that when do we say in our Mishnah that you are mis'ana u'misras, that it's both briois and einon ruuyos lipal. It is solid as a rock. And at the same time, there's no good reason why it should fall. It wasn't too tall, and it's now svasanar. There's no reason whatsoever. And nevertheless, the Kodesh Baruch Hu caused it to fall is the chasim, and this is a simon Minashamayim, that things are not good, and therefore then you have to be Misana u'misras. And the Gemara gives a similar case, but here it's the other way around, meaning that it was Taka Ru'u Ois, but was Einon Ru'u Yois Lipal. What does that mean? So the Markahi Ashita, Ashita means a wall. Ru'ua, which was shaky. Tam ben Edo was a town of Edo. So they have a Chalif Rabbi Shmuel Tusa. Rabbi and Shmuel would never walk next to that wall. Whenever they had to walk, they would always go across the street. Avgav the Kaima Be'asar Tleishashin, even though it had been there for 13 years. And therefore, that's how the Gemara refers to that although it's ru'uah, it's einan ru'uyeh slipah. Yeah, it's takasheki, but it's been here for 13 years, and as far back as anybody can remember, and presumably it'll be here for another 13 years, etc. So, the previous two cases that the Gemara gave were cases of b'riyos, but they were ru'uyeh slipah, because too tall, or next to the water that eroded it. Here it's a case of ru'uah, but it's einan ru'uyeh slipah, because we see this at all has had longevity, it keeps on going even for 13 years, etc. So, now the Gemara tells us the story. So we've explained the Braisa, and what's the story the Gemara tells us? Yom Echad, one day, Ikler of Ada Barahava L'Hasim. Rav Ada Barahava was standing or sitting next to that wall which was Ru'ua. And apparently Rav Ada Barahava was a guest in town, or even if not, he didn't customarily walk in next to that wall, so he was not familiar with the particular circumstances. It's only Shmuel and Rav. When Rav and Shmuel were walking together, Shmuel said to Rav, Nasi Mar Nakiv, let's go around to the other side like we do on a daily basis. Amalei Rav said to Shmuel, Lo Tzerich No Inna, today we don't have to. The Rav Ada Barahava Bahadon, the Nofis Chusir, Rav Ada Barahava is there, he's standing next to him. He has so many schusim, for loy mistafina, we don't have to worry even for a moment that it's going to fall. The schus of that great, great tzaddik of Ada Barahava, you have nothing to worry about. We can go and walk normally. We don't have to walk around.
How does that work? I mean, it's no chan al anes, so.
Well, let's see the next one. Let's get back to your question. So, Rav Huna havaleyahu chamra. Rav Huna had this chamra. Chamra, of course, has two interpretations. It either means wine or it means a chamar. So, whenever you learn the word chamra, the question arises, what are we talking about? So the answer is, they used to say in Yiddish, "Sevenzach vi mitref de chamra." As the chamra is in keler, meint is vine. And mitref is in shtal, meint is a chamar, an eisel. What does that mean? It depends on where you find the chamra. If the chamra is in the cellar of the building, it's in the wine cellar, then it means that it's wine. If you find it in the shtal, in the barn, then you know we're talking about an eisel, about a donkey, we're not talking about wine. So this chamra was bahu beisa, was inside a house, presumably in the wine cellar, re'iyah, which was a very shaky house. So this Rav Huna had the wine sitting, being stored in some rickety rackety type of house where any moment people knew that it might collapse. He wanted to go and remove the wine without chas v'sholem endangering himself or any of the workers. So he wanted to, and ultimately he brought Rav Ada Barahava into that oil, into this bias ruah, and mashke mishmaita, and he talked to him in learning for the next half an hour, 2 hours. At the panya, until they removed every last barrel of wine, and now busted the nofik as soon as they removed that final barrel. And both of them then, so now Rav Huna said to Rav Ada Barahava, okay, we can leave now, we don't have to stick around. Nofel beisa, then the whole bias fell down. Argish Rav Ada Barahava. Rav Ada Barahava was margish. Oh, that's the reason. The last time Rav Huna came to me to go and speak and learning, was 12 years ago, and we spoke for 5 minutes. Here, he brought me into this house, and we spoke for the last hour, and right as soon as we come out, the house fell down, I smell a trap over here. Or, he smelled that the reason why he brought him into the house is so that he'd be able to remove all the wine, and then pack out, and then the house would fall down. Is ikbati had akpada. So the lucky hodiyam rabbiane. What did rabbiane say? The ulam ya al yamin under mukam sakana. A person should not stand mukam sakana. The yoyma oisalinas. Shemein oisalinas. Which is what Barry was asking about 2 minutes ago. Ain samchan alanas. So don't do that. And if you say, no, this person has enough schusim, we have nothing to worry about, okay, fine. But it's still going to diminish and decrease the number of schusim this person will have in his collection for the future, because he's used some of them up. How do I know? Where do you get this concept of Rav Chana, Mikrodoxus, and the Pasik? That Yaakov Vino is saying is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I know that I've done Baruch Hashem lots and lots of mitzvahs. However, you have brought so many chasodim upon me, in the case of Lovan, Mitesav, and all the other Torahs that I went through during my lifetime. So Katointi, I feel now small, and in fact I am smaller as a result of the fact that a lot of my schusim have already been used up for the protective security that you've given me throughout these years. So the Gemara, my Hava Uvdid Rav Ada Bar Ahava, why, in which respect Rav Ada Bar Ahava is so unusual and so unique that Nisim should be performed in his chus? Like we learned, Sholo Tamidov, the Rav Ada Bar Ahava, but Meharach the Yaman. What was the reason for Yarichas Yom? They weren't telling tell us how long he lived, but apparently he lived a long life. But Me'arach the Yom, what did you do? At home, I was always very careful never to get angry, never to get upset at my wife, at the children. It was always, even if I, from time to time, had to go and say some Musar, it was all very nicely delivered, benachas, never behakpata. I was always very careful not to walk in front of a person who is greater in stature than me. Whenever I went in a movi metunaf, in other words, an alley where it had all types of smells, perhaps there was tsoya there, perhaps there was other dead creatures or whatever, and always had this terrible stench, I was always careful not to mahar b'dvar halacha. And I was careful never to walk around without wearing tefillin or learning Torah, constantly learning. And of course, the two now fit together very nicely. In fact, the chayyim should be in reverse. That I was never walking without Dalai Lama's, without Torah and Tefillin. But nevertheless, when I came to Movim and Tunav, I was very, very careful not to mahar in Torah. And when I was very careful about the Kedushas B'Smedish, I never slept till Lashinas Kvav, Lashinas Aroy. Neither did I go and lie down for the night, nor did I go and sleep there temporarily. And I, in Chas HaShom, if any one of my Chaverim never had a Tekola, some obstacle, some problem, I was never happy about it. I was very careful the way I addressed all of my friends, and I only address them with great reverence and respect. What's the difference between hachinosai and chanichosai? Rashi seems to learn that hachinosai means a nickname that people gave someone, and chanichosai it means his surname, his family name, as opposed to his first name. If you look at Rashi down the middle of the Yomid, Bahachi Nosei, Shemachanim Loi Bnei Yodim, such a nickname that people have given him, Kigoin Shem Levi. The word Levi is like a hyphenated name. It's Lavdafka hyphenated, means not the name that he got at his bris, but the nickname that people have given to him. Or Chanichosei Kemoi Chanichas Ovois, Begitten Ad Yudoyer. So that sounds like, Chanichas Ovois sounds like a family name, as opposed to, hey Smith, come on over here. You don't call him Smith. The whole family has 25 Smiths. Oh, Yanko Smith.
And then the first one's like, the name is Aryeh, you call him Ari? Okay.
We're talking about
No, go. But the Hari Chosser.
Yeah.
That would be like, his name is Aryeh, you call him Ari?
Presumably, if the nickname is one that is very positive, like everybody calls him Tzadik, presumably that wouldn't be a terrible thing. But if people go and call him Yingala, Kimte Yingala, or Yankala, his name is Reb Yaakov, they call him Yankala.
It's
with a negative connotation.
And the other one was to say Smith, if his name is
that's how Rashi learns. That's right. Yeah, but if you look on the left-hand margin in our Gemara, so maybe you and your Gemara, maybe it's with a letter with Maseiros Hashas, he has over here on the side, on the left-hand margin, Girsas HaOruch B'Chanichosi, Pirish Shaloi Kinisi Loi Shem, that the first term Hachinosi means I never gave him a nickname, and the second one when it says Chanichosi, Pirish HaOruch Erechanach, Afilu Shem Shekinu Loi Achirim Loi Karasif. So the first one is I never gave people nicknames, I always called the person the way I didn't. This person comes to the shul, oh, there's a smile. I never call him Smiley. I think that's not a nice thing to say, even though it's a nice thing to say, but to call a guy Smiley. So I wouldn't say that. And even if other people say, oh, they're Smiley, I wouldn't call him. I always called him by his name. I never called him either with my own nickname, in other words, that I adopted for him, nor did I call him by a nickname that other people gave him. I always spoke to everybody respectfully, giving them their due respect and reverence. Anyway, that's the end of this story. There is probably an apocryphal story that they say back in the Haim, there was in a town or a village somewhere a person who was a very wealthy individual who passed away. But unfortunately, he was not known in the town for his tzidkus. He, first of all, he was a big amaretz. Number two, he never gave any tzedakah. Number three, he had, you know, all types of, he left people with lots of bad feelings. And he passed away, and the family asked the rabbi to go and and conduct a eulogy.
Not a day in the Ghost Tanis, of course, though.
Of course not. Well, it depends on whether it's the Leilas and Arbain, or this Benoit. Anyway, so the rabbi is saying, I know, what favorable thing can I see about your father? Rabbi, please, you have to find something favorable. Okay, let me think about it. Anyway, the next morning he got up and he said, Rabbi Isai, we are here at the mokim of this person who passed away, and when I think about him, I think about the tremendous midah of Rav Ada Bar Ahava. That just like Rav Ada Bar Ahava was makbid never to mahar the mevuas haptunafos, we could say the same thing here for Yankel Smith. He was mamish the same midah as this great rabbi Rav Ada Bar Ahava, that he also would never mahar the divrei Torah mokam amitos. Anyway, as they determine the maaseh. And we continue on. Yeah.
So, what does that mean though?
Mahar means he never thought in the Torah when he was walking through a stench-filled alley. So Rav Ada Bar Ahava, of course, who was constantly thinking in Torah, 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 that he was careful always for those 5 minutes he was walking through this terrible alley, that's a big mitzvah. This fellow was not Mahar because he wasn't Mahar even in this medrash. Right. He never was Mahar but the Torah.
They say that the Vilna Gaon wrote math books in the back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, because the same, he's so...
His mind is so active. He couldn't stop thinking.
Exactly. Good. That's so a wonderful thought.
To crowd out Torah thoughts.
Exactly. Amalei rova liraf ram bar papa. Limelon mar mihani milima aliasa. The hava ovid Rav Huna. Go and tell us some of the beautiful things that Rav Huna used to do. In other words, tell us about the midas toibis Rav Huna. Amalei biankuse loy dechena. I cannot tell you about his youth, because that I don't remember. B'simuse dechena. But I remember in his older years, in his senior years, that I do remember, and I can go and tell you about that. The chol yoyma de eva, whenever it was a cloudy day, have a mafkin lay b'goy harka de dehava, b'sayir lo lekula masa. Rav Huna apparently was a wealthy individual, and in his older years, they used to go and carry him around with geharka. Geharka means like a beautiful wagon that they have made of gold. And Rashi says this was typically used by the aristocracy, by the nobility, you know, very wealthy individuals, and they would go and carry him. Now, where do they go and carry him? He would go around on a constant basis, if it was a cloudy day, where the weather forecasters were forecasting that it's going to rain today. He was concerned that unfortunately there may be some weak buildings, weak walls, in the town, and as a result of a downpour, it could vali de sakana. The side of the Kulamasa, therefore, he would go and take like a tour. He would have them take him all around the entire town. And if he found a wall that looked like it was shaky, he would go and say to the oilam, go and knock it down. So chas v'shalom, nobody should be endangered by walking next to this wall. E'efshir lamara. Now the word over here, e'efshir, doesn't mean impossible, e'efshir. But rather the word e is like the word im'efshir. Im'efshir lamara, if the owner of the wall was well funded, that he could afford it himself, then he would say to the owner, no, you had this dangerous wall, you'd have had to go and pay far more if chas v'shalom someone would have gotten injured or gotten hurt, and so therefore, you go and build it. And if that building owner was not able to afford the rebuilding of the wall, then Rav Huna paid it from his own pocket. He would go and send a shliach out to the marketplace. If there were any yarokos, any vegetables that were still left right 5 minutes before the store closed in Erev Shabbos, Zovenle, he would have a shliach buy up whatever was left in the store, in other words, perishables. Vishonali Nanahara, and then all of those vegetables which he just bought, he would throw them into the river. Freitimara, why do you do this? Bless Laniyim. Let all Laniyim come by and let him distribute to Laniyim, the poor. Says Yimara, Zimnan the Samchin, Datayu, Lay also the Mizbin. Because we're concerned. Rav Huna said, if I'm going to always, every single week, distribute these free vegetables to the poor, so they're always going to rely on it, and there might be a week that there won't be any vegetables left. And remember, vegetables was a main core of the main staple of their diets, and so therefore, if they're going to rely on me, and guess what, there won't be anything left, you know, I'm just buying whatever's left. If there's nothing left, they won't have anything. So I don't want them to get into that custom of relying on me. Okay, fine. Don't give it to anyone. At least give it to the behemoth to eat. Because so machal other in machil of the behemoth, you're not allowed to give it to the behemoth. The reason why you're not allowed to give it to the behemoth is because it's considered to be a bizoyan oichel, something which is roi for an adam. You don't give a behemoth. You give a dog food. You don't give him human food. But like this is a klal. So why did he buy it in the first place? Because nimtzach machshilin le'asalavei. What he's afraid is that if he's not going to buy whatever is remaining in the store, then the storekeepers don't want to
suffer a loss,
because after all, they didn't have refrigeration. They're going to come back on Sunday morning, all of those vegetables will be spoiled. So what are they going to do? They're going to know for next week. They're only going to order from the wholesalers, from the farmers.
What they ordered the previous
week. Exactly. Only going to take 90%. They're not going to take 100%. I don't want to be stuck with schreider that can't be sold. So therefore, he didn't want to be machshel the storekeepers for the next week. So therefore, he was always very careful. Buy as much as you think you need. If at the end some of it's left over, I'll pick it up.
But dumping into the river is not also beside.
So that's a very good question. So Rashi brings over here that in fact people who live downstream would find the food and they would go and eat it.
But they wouldn't rely on it.
So if you look at the Rashi here, about 8-10 lines before the end, Rashi is in soft lettering, not bold lettering. Bezorak lenohar, v'holchen amokim acher, and the river would go and take it downstream. U'moitzim oisim b'nei adam, and people from the other communities would find it. V'oichon oisan, and they would eat a kaf shemati, says Rashi, that's how I heard pshat. So you're going to tell me, isn't that also, aren't they going to go and rely on the fact that every week at 5 o'clock, before Shabbos, so this week 4 o'clock, whatever.
Well, it was in the river, last Shabbos also on Sunday.
Number one. And number two,
they didn't know where it came from.
Number three, because of the fact that since everybody's downstream, they can't rely on it, because maybe somebody who lives 1 mile upstream of me, he might have taken it
out first.
He fished it out first. He can't rely on it, because even if Rav Huna was dumping huge amounts, by the time it comes to my house, they all have been taken away. Anyway, so that's why you don't have that concern about people relying on it. Getting back to Agumar, we're still talking about the malice of Rav Huna. Ki havale milza da asuta havi mali kuza mine, not the maya kuza mine. If he, Rav Huna, had a special medication, milta dasisa means a remedy for chas v'shalom sickness, which he knew was effective, and he knew that there was a demand for it, and he knew that perhaps the pharmacies didn't have it, or they couldn't get a prescription, or whatever. So he would take these medications, he would fill them in a kuza. Kuza means a container, a pitcher. It could be that it was a water pitcher, or just have a mali kuzumine, he would go and fill up a pitcher with this medicine, but totally besieve the basin, he would go and hang it up from one of the like the lintel at top of his doorway to come, when people come in. The Omar, and he said, called the boy, whoever needs, Lacey Velishko should come and take the medication. You're no questions asked. If you need it, take it. The Ikdiyama, but there was another version of the story. Milta the Shivsa Havigomer, Vavamonach Kuza the Maya Vidole. What is this all about? We have this term Shivsa used at the end of Masechta's Yuma, where it talks about over there that, as we know, there's an Issa Rechitza on Yom Kippur, as well as on Tisha B'Av. But what happens if a mommy, for instance, has to go and feed her child? She should wash her hands with water, because otherwise there is a shindalid that has the name Shifsa. And that shindalid, by the name Shifsa, attacks people that did not wash their hands when they got up in the morning. So that's what the Milta the Shifsa is all about. So the Ikliyam Milta the Shifsa Havagomer, he was very familiar with the rules and regulations about the minhagim of these shindalids, that they go and are mazik. People that get up in the morning without washing, or Rashi said, the Mishiyoichal, person who's going to eat and he doesn't wash his hands, he was very familiar. And therefore, what would he do? He would hang up a pitcher full of water, hung up from his house from the outside. If somebody is hungry and he's walking around and he doesn't have with him his own water supply, so come and take the water and wash your hands. He shouldn't have a sakan. They say, I think, about the close in Bogoruf, that he was in one of these cattle cars being schlepped to the death camps, concentration camps, and that en route, in the middle of everything, he said he needed water. So somebody sold him water for a huge amount, and he took the water and he went and used it to wash his hands. He didn't need it for drinking, for washing his hands, because he was concerned about that type of situation. Anyway, so I moved the ships out of the Gomav of Monach Kuzidamai, and he said, whoever needs it, come to Lisaki, he shouldn't have a sakan. He have a korach rifta, when he would go and start a meal, have a pasach levave, the omar, he would go and open up the doors, in other words, the doors of his house, like you have in the Haggadah. Except when you say in the Haggadah, it rings a little bit hollow, because everybody's already wherever they are. You know, you don't open up the door and say, hey, kol tzitzrich!
But didn't they say that Erev Pesach, when they were getting rid of the chametz?
At that time, could very well be.
It's recorded in the Gada now, but it's
effective. Exactly. Right. Yeah, it could be that this is historical, talking about this and what they did. Concise. Anyway, but this is what he would say when he would start a meal. Everybody who wants, come and get it. So Rava said, I listened to all of these midas toivas that you told me about, Rafuna. Mm-hmm. I could go and follow and fulfill and observe each and every one of them. Except Lubarbeha, this last one that you just said now, that whenever he would eat a meal, he would open his door and invite everybody in. The Rava said, that I couldn't live on Mitzilim Ebed. Why not? Because there are a lot of B'nei Chayil in Mechoyza. That the Parshat Pshat of B'nei Chayil in Mechoyza is that in other Gemaras we have learned that the governments in those days, instead of or in addition to taxing the populace for the military, they would send the military to the various communities, and each community had to go and supply food to the soldiers who are there for a week or a month, whatever, as long as they're stationed in that community. So therefore, what Rava was saying is, there's so many B'nai Chayil, there's such a large garrison of troops, like 100, 500, 1,000, I can't possibly invite all of them to come in every single meal, because I don't have the funds to be able to supply them. That's the Parsha Pshat. However, Rashi is not go-race the words B'nai Chayla, Rashi says, Mishum D'Nefishim B'nai Chayla, B'nai Chayla, says Rashi, T'ik Aniye T'vei, V'Komech Li Kana. What Rav is saying is, even though we've learned in other places that Mechoyza had a lot of very wealthy, pompous individuals, and in fact Rav very often is critical of them, but Rav says, but at the same time there are a lot of Aniyim living here in this town as well, and I can't possibly invite all of them in every single meal because I cannot afford that type of
benefits. It will consume my principal.
Right, exactly. Okay. If I could just go and take it from my investments,
right, my income.
The income, that would be great. But Chalikana, in 6 months, I'll have nothing left. They will have eaten up all of my savings. Rabbis, have a wonderful day. We should all try to emulate these great, great tzaddikim and all their midas toivus and the things that they do.